Hello, and welcome to part one of Common Sense and Responsibility in the Gun Debate in America. Today I'm joined by Austain of the Florida Gun Network. We'll be talking about issues such as what does common sense in gun control actually mean? What does it mean to be a responsible gun owner? Issues of clarity in gun laws, and the potential future of the NRA. I hope you enjoy this week's episode of the Rights and Wrongs podcast. Hello and welcome to the Rights and Wrongs podcast, the podcast where we talk about rights, privileges, and misconceptions. Today we'll be talking about the gun debate in America and common sense. I am joined by Austain, host of the Florida Gun Network. I'll let you introduce yourself, Austain.
All right. Thank you very much for having me. So like you said, I'm the host of the Florida Gun Network. Talk about, it's more like a Q&A session. So far I've talked about body armor, what kind of ammo or firearms you should buy for yourself. And this is really just going based off of the questions that I got as a firearms instructor at the range that I used to work at. And I just love informing people. I don't like to tell people what they should get. I like to let them figure that out for themselves. Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
No, and that's one reason I definitely wanted to invite you on the podcast, because I like the fact that you take a look at it where you're waiting for questions and you're not just telling people what they need to know on this subject, which I feel is too common in this field. And then you get that on both sides, that it's like, these are the only facts that matter. Those facts don't. And I feel like it erodes this conversation as a whole.
Right.
But for anyone who's also wondering why we're not using his full name, it's actually a really interesting point when it comes to this field. I never really thought about doing like my podcast till recently working with people. Strangely, because this is such a very volatile debate, it's interesting where a lot of gun podcasters and YouTubers and stuff hide their identity. And it's not for like any criminal act or anything like that. It just, I think it's one of those things that show how bipartisan and divided our society is on this topic, that a lot of people feel like they have to take extra precautions to talk about, to protect themselves, to talk about their right to protect themselves, which is a strange paradox.
Yeah, it's definitely a very sensitive subject, and if you say the wrong thing, it could turn into something not very good for either you or somebody else that you know.
And that's like one thing I hope to clear up on this discussion of the podcast, just because of how volatile this subject is. And one major mission of the Rights and Wrongs podcast is we like to focus on the rights and the wrongs part, wrongs being misconceptions and buzzwords. I wanted to ask you, did you have any specific buzzwords, even though I know this field's full of them, that bug you when it comes to this debate?
A couple of them. So the first one would be assault rifle. Assault is a threat. If you actually look at the legal definition of assault, it's, say if I was standing in front of you at a little more than arm's reach and I took a swing at you and missed, that is assault. If I actually make contact, then it's battery. And if that were the case, you would call them battery rifles, which doesn't have quite the same ring to it. So, and that's going along with like the weapons bans and stuff. I think they should focus less on how they look. Like, there's a lot of bills that I've read that have very in detail described how they look, how, you know, you can attach an accessory to the barrel or the handguard. You know, what else can you put on it that isn't standard or the way that it comes from the manufacturer? And you can't have a, quote, pistol grip. It has to be, you know, like one of the old style wooden rifles, which is ridiculous. And I think they should focus less on the aesthetics of it, but focus more on the features. Like, one of the very controversial subjects of assault rifles is the amount of rounds that they can carry in the magazine. Yes, you can buy, you know, 10, 20, 5 round magazines for like hunting and stuff. But if that's really what they're going after, I feel like they should specify that in the bills, since it is such a hot topic and it seems to be like the most outstanding language whenever they draft the bills.
I agree with that. When it comes to the laws of it, it does get a little frustrating because we have the assault weapons ban, not the assault rifles ban in Massachusetts. And for me, like, this is my personal view and I'll get more into it later. It's just like, coming from Massachusetts, for my state, I don't see why we need assault rifles, but like, that's a state issue, I feel, not a national issue. We don't have a bunch of wolves running around. We have coyote, but, and we do have coy wolves, but it's just like, that's one of the things, and we can't even hunt with rifles, but that's like a whole another argument. But we have the assault weapons ban, and it does get a little frustrating because if you're trying to ban weapons of war, I find it ironic you can't have an AR-15 or an AK, but I can have an SKS, an M1 Grand, an M1 carbine, because it has Woodstock, doesn't have a pistol grip or bayonet lug, which, like, the Marine right. Corps is the last branch to train with bayonet training. I did want to point out, though, it is interesting how you talked about the word of assault rifle, because I want to use this, I'm hoping I'm using, like, etymology. It's kind of, from my understanding of it, it comes back as more of like a Frisbee scenario or or Kleenex, where you know a specific brand, where the first well-known assault rifle would be the Sturmgewehr 42 or 38 or the MP38, depending on the terms that you want to use it. But the literal translation of Sturmgewehr from German is assault rifle, because the Sturm is assault, Gewehr being rifle. So it's weird how like the first of it became of it. So it always reminds me of Frisbee. But like, because they're all flying discs, but we all call them Frisbees, which is a specific company. So it is weird how that goes, where it's just like the first one named it. But it's like, yeah, it was the family of this, but when you're looking at what assault actually means, and if you're talking about, like, if you're going to ban semi-automatic rifles, I always feel like then just ban semi-autos, and then trying to define what an assault rifle is. Even, like, the best gun people will screw up defining an assault rifle. Like, they're going to miss some. Is it, like, open bolt? Is it closed bolt? Is it tilting lug? Or is, like, there's going to be something that they're going to oversee.
Does it have a gas, you know, what kind of gas pressure system does it have?
Yeah, like, is it gas or is it piston? Or, like, there's going to be something that they're going to screw up. And that's the reason why it's, and the truth is, like, the only real difference between a true, like, SKS and an AK-47 is if it has a pistol grip or not. Like, yes, you're going to go into that whole entire, someone's probably screaming listening to this podcast, I guarantee you right now, they're like, an assault rifle has a selector switch and goes into 3-round burst or goes in full auto in the semi. Okay, I was in the Marine Corps. I never saw combat. I won't say I ever did. I've been in Afghanistan. I've carried my M16, was trained on an A2 with iron sights, and carried an A4 my entire time I was active and in reserve. I have never, and I'll put never, and you can ask infantry guys most likely, never put my rifle in burst. If, like, it's stupid. You're turning. Because military issue is, like you said, like extended mag, which I always wish they would define that a little bit better. Burst is a stupid option, and so is full auto, because 30 rounds of full auto is gone in 10 seconds.
Maybe, if you're lucky.
And in a war scenario, this isn't Call of Duty. Like, I have 180 rounds on me. That's it for the entire firefight. Do I want...
You can't just run over to somebody and pick up more.
Yeah, like, that. You don't just run over and just magically replenish. Like, I don't... And using bursts, it turns 30 well-aimed trigger pulls into 10 pray and misses. Like, that's all that happens.
Yeah, very, very much spray and pray.
So, congratulations. You know the difference between a Fiat and a Volkswagen Bug, but they're just both small cars. Like...
Oh yeah,
that's my issue with it. But yeah, you do point on that, like, it is a little confusing and there is clarity, because like I said, like, if you're going to ban something, just go out and ban it. Don't make it confusing for, like, when I go out, is this an assault rifle, but like, I'm looking for a bayonet lug, and it's just like, why do okay, like,
yeah,
there's certain things I understand, like, we ban open bolt firing guns because they can easily convert it to machine guns. Like, I understand that. And that goes into the whole entire machine gun debate. But when it comes to assault rifles, it is just such a... It's just... I wish the laws were more clear, but the arguments a lot of people make disprove the laws they're doing are kind of hurting the fight more than help it half the time.
Right.
For myself, another buzzword that I wanted to talk about, which feeds into this, is the term common sense gun control, I think is a huge buzzword in this field. And the reason I think that this one's a huge issue is because anyone that's listened to it's like, well, yeah, common sense is common sense. And it's just the other people don't know what they're talking about. Where I always hear the saying, common sense is not a common virtue. And if you're trying to say that, like, not everyone realizes or understands the same thing that you think is common sense, that's correct. But it's more that common sense is relative. If you're from a gun culture and community, like, you're in Florida, so you're far more likely to be around people that grew up around guns.
Right.
I'm from Boston. Like, are there hunters there? Yeah. Are there gun owners there? Yeah, I'm a licensed gun owner myself. But we don't grow up hunting for the most part. Like, and you walking around your daily life seeing a firearm isn't a common thing outside of, like, the National Guard or a cop. So what is common sense around a firearm isn't common to us, but what is common sense to us is, like, how to safely ride the subway. Like, we can always tell when there's a tourist on the subway with us because their back's pointed to things, their wallet's clearly showing, they're just they're not holding onto the guardrail, or if they're not, because a lot of us don't hold the guardrail on the subway, but, like, they clearly don't know how to subway surf, and, like, their feet are close together, and it's like they're gonna fall on their face. Like,
you can almost point it out before it even happens.
Yeah, like, for us, like, that's common sense. Because we grew up on the subway, like, as soon as you go up. But someone that's from, like, Alaska or Texas, that they're like, oh, yeah, like, I don't, like, I know this gun from this gun, and, like, not to point it at someone, or, like, how to tell when it's loaded, or tell when the safety's on. Like, that might be common sense to you, but there's a good chance that those people that are saying that you put them on the subway, they might not know how to ride the subway. Not saying, right. Claire, like, I'm not saying everyone in Boston doesn't know how to handle a gun, but that's where I'm just, you use that as an example of how common sense is relative, and that's the reason why I don't like the term common sense gun control, because it then puts people in their own knowledge of it. So of course people that didn't grow up around guns are like, oh, it's common sense that most people don't know guns because I don't know it, or people that grow up around it. So I always want to use the term educated gun reform instead. Like, like, in, I think it's more of a, that's why guns, I find the gun debate weird at a national level, because it should be, if you're going to do gun, common sense gun control, it should be common sense for your local area, not right. This national issue. And like,
yeah, and I think we might be talking about licensing and stuff, but don't want to get too far ahead. So another one for me is, quote, I'm doing air quotes here, responsible gun ownership. And what I mean by that is not just how to handle a firearm or how to shoot it or take it apart or, you know, clean it, whatever. That's all stuff you should do. Don't get me wrong. But what is it that you do with it when you're not handling it? What do you do with it when you can't take it with you on the plane or to a theme park or anywhere else that's not gun friendly? What do you do with it in that situation? Which is the main reason why I don't like leaving it in my car. Because neither my center console or my glove box are able to be hard locked.
See, it's interesting you say that, because I remember I was doing I had to do a polygraph, which was I was getting hired for a law enforcement gig in Vermont, which requires polygraph, Mass doesn't. And on it says, like, guns aren't allowed in the premises. I'm like, okay, if you're going to have it, leave it in your car. And everything about me, about a Massachusetts gun owner, was, like, screaming that this is ridiculous. Because Massachusetts, like, if you have your gun on you, it's on you. There's no other safer place besides on you. Like, and also we're concealed, so it's, like, I'm not expressing that I'm having it. But, like, for me, when I saw that, I'm like, okay, it's Vermont. Like, Vermont is just Vermont. But, no, exactly, I know what you're talking about, because there is that. And, like, there is an issue of, like, responsibility. Because, like, anyone that hasn't listened to this podcast before, don't know anything about me. I'm American, clearly you can hear it, but I'm right now sitting live in Glasgow, Scotland. I have owned a gun, but as soon as I moved here, I sold it to another licensed friend, made sure it was registered to them, because one, I'm not going to – it's one, it's illegal to put firearms in a storage unit in Massachusetts. And the second thing is, just like, I wouldn't want to. And third of all, it's like, this gun was registered to me. I'm not even in the same continent, never mind state. I want to make sure all the registered responsibility of this firearm is in an area with someone that I trust with it, that they're not going to do anything wrong with it. And two, like, I just don't want the liability at that point.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, too. There was a time I was going out for dinner, and it was pretty late at night, and I was like, you know what? I'm just hungry. Just sit me down somewhere. I don't care where it is. And I don't care if it's outside, inside, whatever. And they're like, oh, we can sit you at the bar. So in Florida, you actually can carry inside the restaurant that serves alcohol. And it has to be a food service restaurant. It can't be a bar that just sells food. It has to be I don't even remember the percentage. It's like a percentage. If you sell this much in food and then this much in alcohol. But you can sit inside the restaurant area, but the second you step foot into the bar, you've automatically broken state law.
So it's interesting because I know North Carolina has similar laws like that. I think you can go into a bar in North Carolina. Don't quote me on it because the laws constantly change. Right. So if anyone that's like listens to what I'm about to say and goes into a bar in North Carolina with a gun, I'm not your legal defense. Just saying. But from my understanding, back when I was serving in North Carolina, you could conceal carry in a bar, from my understanding, but you could not drink.
Right. Like, and that's the thing, too. You know, even if you were able to carry in a bar, or even just not in a bar, and you want to go out and, you know, shoot with a couple buddies, have a couple drinks, you know, whatever, you should probably shoot first and then the drinks. That just goes along with being, quote, responsible. That's not even what, like you said, it seems like common sense to us, but to somebody else.
Like, I understand people want to, like, me and my friends, when we go out, we will drink afterwards, but, like, we'll like to go out and shoot and, like, with, like, smoke bullets and then smoke cigars. Like, it's just, that's the thing. But, like, alcohol comes far later. Like, you just, it seems strange how people want to mix alcohol and guns, where it's like, you wouldn't mix alcohol and cars. Where, I hope you don't mix alcohol and cars.
Right.
Why are you doing this with a firearm? That's something that always confused me. There's like organizations like Legal Heat, and there's other or like Second Call, and I think it's really important to know your specific gun rights, because sometimes you'll be surprised what is legal, what isn't legal. But also, like, do your history, because like some of the stuff that I thought were stupid laws, I found out were actually make a lot of sense for that specific reason, or like there's a good historical reason behind that law. Some have really bad and are very racist or prejudiced against people of certain ethnicities and religions, but some make sense.
Right.
Did you have a second topic you wanted to hit, or did you want to go into licensing?
No, that was pretty much it. The assault rifle and, quote, responsible gun owners.
Yeah, I completely agree with it. It's just because it's funny when you listen to a lot of... And I'm happy to see there are more moderate, what I would consider moderate, gun channels coming out. Like, such as yourself, I find pretty moderate, because you're not really trying to talk policy enough. It's just like, just be responsible. Just know your laws. Like, there's a place for the advocacy, but there's a place for safety at the same point. Like, well, advocating for safety and responsibility. I'm happy to see there's a lot more groups out there. And I think an important thing, too, if anyone's listening to this, and I should have just hit this further, if you're anti-gun control or pro-Second Amendment, there's no reason why you have to be one or the other. There's actually, for the most part, I believe, and you can, I want to get your take on this, but my belief is most groups want the same thing, and they just want a safer community. And most people that are for gun control, they're not trying to take your guns away. They just want to make sure they're in the hands of responsible people, but they're going about it by trying to get the guns out of everyone's hands and then kind of put them back in the hands of those that they see worthy. Where a lot of the pro 2A people want the same thing. They want guns in the safety of the hands, but they want to make sure they feel more safe, making sure everyone has the right for it, but then take it away from the people they don't see worthy or safe. Going from like a positive rights to negative rights view on it.
Right. See, that's so... that's such a gray area, because none of us want to see the guy that just talked about suicide, you know, 5 days prior to getting a gun, you know, having a gun and doing something to himself or somebody else. Any decent human being wouldn't want that. But there is a very fine line between, like you said, getting it in the hands of people that are authorized to have it, and then maybe taking it away afterwards, like they figure out that they're not okay to have it, and just having like no rights whatsoever to that, and just not being able to have it.
It's one of those things where we are a rights-based culture. We never feel comfortable giving up our right to something, which I understand. But the problem is that like I do have a really strong understanding of where the other side's coming from, because this isn't like your right to eating too much ice cream where you might hurt yourself and get diabetes. When you're dealing with the issue of getting it on the unworthy or unsafe person to have a gun, waiting till we find out that they're not worthy, it might be too late for a tragedy. And I think like because of the cost of it, but the same thing can be said about vehicles at the same time.
Right. Well, and then, you know, you got to look at these mass shootings that have happened over, I would say, we haven't really had a mass shooting over here in the States
recently, which is surprising, but the truth is the amount of mass shootings that we have compared to other first world nations is astronomically crazy.
Right.
Like, there is an issue, but that's a mental health issue, but people... I think another argument there is like, well, it was a mental health issue. Well, can we then actually address the mental health issue instead of blaming it? Like,
that's exactly.
Yeah.
Well, see, and that's the thing. Like, most of these shooters got these guns legally, and they were within the state that they were in. They were legally within their laws and policies to get that firearm, but, you know, we all know what happens.
And I think it's interesting, too, because, like, this is coming from a close family member that's been close to half a century and working in Social Security. It's interesting to find out there was a push and a policy for Social Security that was actually fought from within, because someone was trying to push a law in the United States that if anyone collects disability from Social Security, you'll be banned from federally allowed to own a firearm in the United States. Like, at a face value to, like, skin deep face value, like, oh, that kind of makes sense. But then when you look at, it's like, that might only actually make sense for like 20% of people that are on disability for a mental issue. Like, the fact that you lost your leg in a motorcycle accident doesn't mean you still can't hunt. Like, in most states, you're legally allowed to hunt on the back of an ATV if you're disabled.
Jeez.
But that's the reason why, like, the people in Social Security themselves fought against this, because it was, one, I understand where they were coming from on this point of view, because you're trying to stop the guns from getting to the people that are mentally disturbed from legally owning the firearm. But then it was just poor policy writing that,
right,
which is like, we go back to like, what is an assault rifle? Poor policy writing. Like, there, you need to. Because you almost saw a similar thing, I think it was Massachusetts, was trying to write a law saying anyone that is susceptible to PTSD can't have a firearm. Where, like, to the layman or the uninitiated, that makes a lot of sense. It's not proven PTSD, though susceptible, which is all law enforcement, all firefighters, all nurses, all doctors, all veterans.
Right.
Like, because you're talking susceptibility. Like, I had to, like, I personally, and, like, I highly suggest this for most guys that get out of the police or military and stuff. Go see a psychiatrist. Like, don't, like, go, like, because I went as soon as I got out and sat down and made sure that I didn't have PTSD, because it's one of those things that only a sane person thinks they're insane. But the truth is also the inverse. It's like, you might not know you have a problem because this is how you just, this is your new normal. I think it's important to go check it out. Even if you go in, they find out you're perfectly fine. Like, that's good. Like, I feel like that's a good thing.
Right.
If you find out they might think you might have an issue, get a second opinion. And if by the time you're at your third opinion and they say you might have an issue, you might have an issue.
Right.
But no, like, I do agree with that. And I think there are better ways to go about it, because you and I both, we pulled some massive holes into these other policies that they're making. they weren't ironclad policies to begin with. Like, they're clearly punchable holes, but it just seems like as soon as you give one side an inch, they're going to take a mile because they're scared of the other side. And, like, there's a lack of communication, lack of understanding, just really bad defining of terms. Like,
I guess you kind of agree with me where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to also go on to licensing, which I thought when we did our interview before, I thought it was very fascinating because you come from a state where you only need licensing for concealed carry, correct?
Correct.
Where I come from a state, which I think we're one of the only states, you need a license to just own. You can't buy long guns without a firearm ID. You can't buy a handgun unless you have a concealed carry license. You can only conceal carry in our state. The only gun you can buy without a license is, I think, a smoothbore muzzleloader. But you can't buy the black powder without the FID. Which, I don't have an issue with that.
Yeah.
But I think it was interesting, though, because we were talking about, and you guys have a, you guys kind of do something smart that I wish we could do, but we can't because of our laws. And I'm not sure how we, there's ways to get around it, but I don't think they'll ever do it. Which was about, like, you just do firearm instructing. You said that you tell people to bring their gun with them.
Right. So we would do the concealed carry class, and we would always tell them, you know, and this was to help them as well. If you're going to do the class, bring the gun that you're going to be carrying to the class. And that was only because we don't want somebody, you know, doing the class with a 22 and then going out and buying a 45 and thinking, oh, well, I passed the class. I can do this. Like, there's very big difference there. And it also, and just kind of go off on the licensing factor, I absolutely think licensing is a must. It's absolutely necessary. It shows that you have at least demonstrated somewhat competency at a passing rate to somebody that's trained in that field, not just the fact that you think you're okay using a firearm.
No, and that's a really good point. The one thing I was trying to say about Massachusetts I wish we could do is in Massachusetts, you can't bring your gun to the concealed carry course because in order to, like I said, to buy a handgun, you have to already have that concealed carry license. So, like, you're not going to retake a concealed carry course if you already have. I recommend if, like, you've had a license and you haven't, like, you don't want to keep up the laws, maybe do it. Like, I'm not saying don't do it. Like, never hurts to get more training. But the average citizen's not going to do that. So there is a live fire requirement in Rhode Island. Massachusetts, it's highly recommended and it's up to the police chief. Because the police chief's the one that actually produced, like, my license is given by the police chief of my home city. Hmm. So, and I like that idea because they have to do references. And, like, even if you're in one of the cities of the greater Boston area, he's going to know your records. He's going to know your neighbors probably. He's going to add, like, he's going to put it up the block, see if you ever were in trouble in that town. Like,
right.
Like, and they have the right to refuse for any reason. But for the most part, they're pretty good about it. Like, and we have, like, yeah. I guess we quote unquote would call a green book in Massachusetts of, like, towns that we have red, which are, like, you're not going to get a license. Like, Boston's one of them. Sharon used to be one of them. You have green cities, which, like, as long as you do everything as you're supposed to and you're not a criminal, you'll get one. And then you have the blue, which is kind of like a flip of a coin. But, like, it's either it's a flip of a coin or there's just not enough data on it because, like, for maybe that people in that town just don't have a gun culture, which could be the case.
Right.
Going on to what you were saying about, I wish we did that because in Massachusetts they do the live fire exercise, but it's on 22 caliber handguns. When I got my license, it was before the assault rifle ban, and, like, you could still get semi-automatic rifles. But the thing that, like, always would drive me insane is, like, when I was taking this test, it's like, I'll be honest, like, I am a horrible shot with a handgun. I've shot everything from Mach Deuces to automatic grenade launchers, like, heavy machine guns, like, M4s, M16s while I was in the Marines. Never touched an M9 pistol. Because it was just, like, I just wasn't a staff NCO, I wasn't an officer, and just, like, honestly, I kind of had no care to carry a pistol while I was in the military. Like, my M16 was enough. They're kind of useless. I don't want to say completely useless, but for the most part, if I'm in a combat zone and, like, I'm an electrical engineer, if I'm in the firefight, there's a problem. Like, like not as bad as like if the Air Force generated mechanics in the firefight, then like we've that's a real problem. But like if I'm in the firefight, I'm fine on my M16, and I'd rather just be with a weapon system that I'm comfortable with. But shooting a 22 caliber handgun, like this is a great introduction, but now you can go buy a Desert Eagle, like you said, or an AK or a shotgun, and this is stuff that they've never shot before. So I think like if any like people in Massachusetts are in a state that does this, please consider, even if you have to jump up your price a little bit for your, like, please just bring like a simple 22, 23, or 5.56 rifle that you have them to, or shoot a shotgun, just because it would make me feel better. Like, and everyone else that's on the range with your students are going to thank you for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's just something I think is really important. It's either that or start doing like trading gun licenses like they do with cars, where like I have a driver's license and a motorcycle license, and I had to be tested out on both. And like, right. I think it'd be easier and smarter for us to actually train them on all the weapons platforms before their license and let them learn what they like and don't like, than adding more licenses.
Right. Now, I do think that like the license types, long gun, handgun, whichever, should be left to the states, as well as licensing procedures. So meaning uniformity across the board, whether that's through the police chief, sheriff's department, or state government, because in Florida, you pay the state. So, I just would kind of prefer that there would be more uniformity across the board when it comes to that.
And I agree. And it's kind of interesting because I've heard a lot of people say, like, oh, we should give law enforcement a free gun pass. Like, but Massachusetts, like, you, as soon as you're a cop, you have, because you're carrying a gun, you have to have your license. So they issue it to you through the department. But I do, because of like what I said in the military, it's like I've fired all this. And I know some people in the military fired a handgun. But if they ever do make a policy that they give like all veterans a pass, I'd feel more comfortable if they only gave them a pass on long guns. But that's my personal belief, and like I'm not trying to, like, that's just from my viewpoint of it.
Right. Yeah. See, that's the thing. I think military shouldn't have to have a permit if they were properly trained in the service.
Well, in the Marine Corps, like, yeah, we live, sleep, and eat with our rifle all through boot camp and combat training. But shooting a rifle and shooting a handgun are two different beasts. Like, I can shoot a quarter at 500 yards with a with a well decent M16, even with iron sights, I can probably hit a paper plate, but at 500 yards. But you hand me a handgun, total different system, total different, like, so much easier to flag someone, so much easier to shoot yourself in the foot.
Right.
So, like, that's the reason why I say, like, I get, like, if I wouldn't have a problem with, if you're in the military, you get a long gun license without a problem. But
yeah.
Unless, like, maybe officers, because officers always have to do handgun qualification. But, like, if you're standing enlisted, that's where, like, I'm going. And people are going to be like, well, some people that are enlisted did handguns. Like, yeah, but I'm just looking at the safety standpoint, because here's the truth is, and I'm sorry to say this, and I didn't realize this until I joined the reserves, because when I did the reserves, I got my license. Us in the military have really bad gun discipline. And it's partly out of necessity. Like, it's just like, I knew in Afghanistan, like, you're supposed to have, like, two and alert to the dirt. Not all of us are grunts. Like, I'm a generator mechanic. Like, if I'm walking around Afghanistan, I'm keeping my rifle with me. But if I have to grab cable and my toolbox to make sure power goes to the, like, HQ, my rifle is being slung across my back.
Right.
And, like, that's not, and, like, running and stuff, that's not proper gun, so, like, that's not good gun discipline. And if you think about it, like, we slept with our rifles in our rack with us or next to us. They're loaded. Like, condition three, like, there's a magazine inserted. But I hate to say it, accidentally putting your M16 into condition one is a lot easier than people think it is. And it happens. Like, you should always have that good. Like, the military really does make you check. Like, before you enter, you always check to make sure it's not loaded. Because it can happen.
I've seen instructors in, you know, they do it too.
And yeah, that's the other thing about it. It's just like, the whole thing is treat every weapon as if it's loaded, especially if the gun actually is loaded, treat it as if it is loaded.
Right.
But in the difference in the military, like in our experience, like, yeah, I'm giving you examples of when I did bad gun discipline, but it was necessary to the mission. But
yeah,
there's nothing I'm doing in civilian life that warrants or justifies me flagging or pointing a loaded firearm at someone.
Right.
Like, nothing. Like, outside of, like, yeah. Or, yeah, like, yeah, if you're in a mugging or something like that, but that's when you're pointing a weapon at somebody you intend to shoot.
Well, and that's the thing. That goes in Florida, that would be considered aggravated assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing.
And even still, you're a violent convicted felon because you did it, and now you lost your guns.
And that's the thing. Massachusetts is the same way. It's like, if you pull it out, use it. But here's the other thing that I have a feeling about it. Like, and this is a strong feeling. This is the reason I'm not extremely anti-open carry. It's just in my personal life, being a Bostonian, I don't like the idea of open carrying because I'm from a highly congested area. Subways are a thing. I'm very worried about someone trying to grab my wallet. Never mind, I want them to. So I'm even worried if I'm concealed carrying a gun because, like, they might not know I have a gun, but they go to grab my wallet and, like, ooh, look at this piece of candy and walk away with it. Like, hopefully it's secure enough and you're going to notice it. Some reason I like a revolver because there's weight to it and I know it's there. But the other thing about it, though, is I want to make sure that I minimize that as much as possible. So having this big giant take this off my hip target doesn't seem responsible to me.
Right.
And also,
yeah, there certainly is some level of, you know, the surprise factor in that.
Yeah.
Because I think we talked about it before, but if something were to happen and somebody sees you have a firearm, one, you're a target, first and foremost. And then, you know, people see that you have a gun, but you're not necessarily associated with what's going on. So you're seen as the good guy with the gun. And then it's, oh, well, you have a duty to act. Oh, well, yeah, I do, but I kind of don't, but I do because I have this gun. But, and then by the time you figure all that out, you're already done.
Yeah. So one, it limits your choice. And two, like, hopefully you're recognized as the good guy with the gun, not because if a cop's showing up to the scene and they see here, there's an active shooter or a guy with a gun. Hopefully, if you haven't grabbed it yet, they're not going to go after you. But they're definitely, the police are now going to be definitely aware of you and not necessarily aware of the actual threat.
Exactly.
Second, like you said, takes away your choice because the second you're showing your gun off your hip, you're already showing what your first response as you're trying to project is going to be. I personally, gun should be your last response. Like, I've done a little hand-to-hand. I've trained a little bit with it. Honestly, I think this is my last resort. So why am I going to show – that's like you don't go to war showing off all your nukes, well, unless you're like Russia or North Korea and put it down Red Square. But like
– right.
But that's – you don't show your last resort because then it becomes your expected first resort. And I don't like that message. The second thing is like I think people need to be aware and – like a lot with like I listen to other people like in range, like Carl always puts, like if you're talking about guns, you need to promote first aid because you're more likely to be to patching up holes in a situation than you are that making them. The second thing is like we need to teach better communication and de-escalation thing. If you are caring about your self-defense, using your words can get you out of a position safer than you having to pull out your gun.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it should be the very, very, very last resort. I was going to say last result, but last resort. But yeah, and that's what they teach you in the class too, is that you should absolutely try to de-escalate in any way that you possibly can, because as soon as you pull that out, it's gone from 0 to 100 in 1.5 seconds.
And here's the thing, though, is if you're pulling that gun out, and any for those guys out there that have never actually trained for this situation, or I even say, like, if you haven't even shot competition where you're shooting under the clock, when you're in a high-stress environment, you're going to freak out. Like, you always hear that argument, like, why didn't the cop shoot for the leg or shoot the gun out of the kid's hand? It's like, we're not all Billy the Kid. We're not all John Wayne. One, it's like your heart is pumping so much. The truth is one of the biggest things about firearm shooting is breath control. Well, that's out the window the second that your heart starts pumping. Unless you're just a stone cold killer, like you're not going to have that view, and I hope you aren't. Because then you're probably not the good guy in that situation. Just going to point that out. No, it's like, the second you go that, it's just like I said, I can shoot, in good conditions, I can probably shoot a quarter at 500 yards. Yet at the same point, you hand me a pistol, I'm lucky if I can hit the target at 25 yards. But, like, I'm not hitting it with any accuracy. Because, one, it's you're going from a 22-inch barrel to, like, my revolver's a 3-inch barrel.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of accuracy is lost in there. A lot of control. A lot of different carrying. And now you're also under a high stress. And, like, that's on a good condition. Now at bad stress position, too. Like, I'm aiming center mass just because, like, I'm hoping to hit something. Because if by the time, like, we set the last result, we've already hopefully have tried everything else. But when it comes to self-defense, there's so many different topics. Another position I like to always give, like for the idea of choice, I know a lot of country guys or people out in Arizona or Alaska, this isn't something for you, but you're in a city area. I'm, like I said, I'm from a major city area.
Mm-hmm.
Alleyways are a thing and so are blocks. So if I'm walking, I always get the scenario, if I'm walking down an alley, and same thing like you can use here in Glasgow for any like your like European listeners or Berlin or anywhere else. If you're walking down an alley, like walking down the street, you see an alley and you see something going on, whether it's a mugging, a sexual assault case, any of this, I see this. No one else might not be able to see this. But if my first response is to grab the gun, someone else that's another legal gun owner that's walking around that doesn't see the scenario that I'm seeing, all they see is me pull out a gun and point at someone, I'm not the good guy to that bystander.
Yeah, you've forfeited all that.
Yeah. And that's one reason I always say situational awareness, I think, is another thing that people don't teach. And that's another reason why I'm very much against open carrying a lot of situations. Now, if you're at like a barbecue and like people are like in the gates of known gun barbecue, or like you're on your own land on a ranch or a farm, or you're hunting, or you're law enforcement or security, that's different.
Right.
Or you're just in an area where everyone's carrying, like probably Coyote, Wyoming or something like that. Like people just carry out there. Like that's just, you match your gun to your watch. That's just what they do there. Like, okay. But don't expect to get the same result if you try to do that in Providence or LA. Well, LA, they might think you're a cosplayer, but.
Yeah. And see, it's funny you mention that because like, I still think of the videos of people that are on their phones 24/7 and they like fall down manhole drains and walk through wet cement and just almost in front of cars and walking into the fountain at the mall. And it's like, we are a generation of constant inattention, I think.
And it's, well, the thing is like, we think we're multitasking and we are, but we're multitasking and paying attention to the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
People always make the joke like if you're at the gym and you don't wear headphones, like that person's a psychopath. And it's like, no, like I'll wear gym, like I listen to like headphones when I'm lifting. I don't really like to do it when I'm on the treadmill because I'm only on the treadmill when it's raining or snowing or too cold or too dark. But like when I'm out on the street and running, like I don't have headphones in.
Right.
Like one, there's other people around, I need to be aware. There's cars going around, like there's a million different things. Like you're out in the world and you're running, going around corners and stuff like that. Like, why am I going to limit my safety? And, like, I feel like once you add a firearm, which is your responsibility to what you're carrying on you, it's your responsibility to even be even more heightened aware. Like, I think it personally should be, like, no one's addressed it, but I personally think wearing headphones, like, not ear pro, like, at a range or anything, but wearing headphones should be illegal while carrying a gun. I personally think so. It sounds weird, and probably people aren't thinking about that, but it's just, yeah, concealed carry, you're not going to know if they're carrying or not, but two, it's just, that is an actual, like, concern of mine, because you should be aware of what's going on.
Right. Well, that's like the people that drive with headphones in, or bike with headphones in. It's like, you're taking away a sense that is very helpful. If you don't hear somebody honking their horn at you, or God forbid, an emergency vehicle coming through the intersection, you know, or for any one of those things that, you know, you need to hear. Same thing with people with the music too loud. You know, I'm sure you've been in traffic where you could hear the guy's music that's like 50 feet away from you.
Oh, it's funny you talk about that, because living in the UK, one of my biggest pet peeves is the fact all emergency lights are blue. And what I mean by that is, like, fire's blue, ambulance is blue, and police are blue. But, like, the police drive vans, the ambulance drives vans, and the fire trucks don't drive, like, massive trucks. Like, a fire truck, you probably know it's a fire truck. But, like,
right.
But the same thing is, like, and I was trying to explain this to my UK friends, and it sounds weird to, like, them. It's like, I don't like this because I don't, like, I haven't driven in the UK, but that would drive me insane. They're like, why is that? I'm like, in Massachusetts, or not in just, well, Massachusetts, yeah, but, like, some states are different, like, Rhode Island and New York's strange for this because their cops are, like, their stadies are red. But for the most part across the United States, if you have blue lights, get out, move one lane. If it follows you, pull over. Red, right. Blue, get the hell out of the way because that's a fire truck. If it's red, white, get the hell out of the way because it's an ambulance. And exactly. I like to know, unless you're in, like I said, New York State or Rhode Island, move over one. If they fall on you, it's probably a statey. But
right.
For the most part, like, blue, definitely always pull over. And red, for the most of the time, just get out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they'll teach them in driving school for those vehicles. Be prepared for the people's first reaction to step on their brake.
Yeah, and but the thing with, like, I'm going with that, when you're talking about, like, when people talk about that with, like, situational awareness, is that here in the UK, like, I know it's a weird tangent about emergency vehicles, people here say is, well, you just listen for the siren, you know the difference. I'm like, yes, we had the same thing in the States. Like, you know the difference between each siren, but what if your music's too loud, and how many cars now have active noise canceling?
Uh-huh.
Like, police cars, I know in Boston, I'm not sure where you are, if they do it, but, like, if you have a noise canceling or very secure, they use subwoofers now to vibrate the inside of your car to let you know that there's an emergency vehicle behind you, which I think is kind of nice for turns.
Right. Yeah, it's similar. They have rumblers.
Yeah, that's – but, like, you feel it. And,
right.
But no, it is true, though, because you do have this situational awareness, and, like, technology does change things, and it causes these issues. Sorry, I was just checking, like, wow, we've been talking for, like, an hour, I just noticed. So we talked about licensing. I was going to ask you, what is your view on the issues that are going on with the NRA? Because there's a lot of – the NRA is kind of up in there. For any of my European listeners, I'd be surprised if you didn't know what the NRA is, but, like, that's the National Rifle Association, kind of the gun advocates. And they're in court. They're currently, I think, the state of New York is the one that's basically suing them, and they've claimed to be bankrupt, and they might be moving to Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's basically my thoughts on the NRA is it's basically like a workers' union. They're good when you need them to fight. But not really for much else. If you're in trouble, they'll get you. But if not, then, I mean, you got competitions and some discounts. And there's only a handful of those. And you have instructional courses like becoming a certified range safety officer and all those. But I was an NRA member for the last 2 or 3 years, I want to say. And can't say I really used them for anything, but I'm not as much of a, I guess, a more proactive gun owner. Like, I don't do courses or anything else. I don't go shooting in competitions like 3-gun or 5-gun or whatever.
People that know what 3-gun is, it's a competition where you use rifle, pistol, and shotgun. 2-gun is just strictly rifle and pistol, which I'd rather do 2-gun because I just don't feel like shooting that much shotgun.
Right. I think I used maybe an NRA discount once in the last 3 years, but I feel like that's a not very well known discount that people offer. It's not like AAA or AARP or whatever. Definitely the NRA moving from New York to Texas is going to be a huge move for them. For one, it's an association with a better local and state government. I think they're going to have so many more memberships now, one, because of the current administration. Citizens are going to need that extra push, like I said, for the workers' union. And yeah, that now I do think they have some extent at a state level, such as having different branches, but I don't believe that they should be interfering with prospective laws, because then you get into lobbying and all those things.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because like, I'm not going to claim to speak for all Massachusetts gun owners at this point, but personally, me being from Massachusetts, I'm not the biggest fan of the NRA, but I understand like that's my, like, as you're talking about like local issues, I've always found the NRA to be in opposition of what most Massachusetts gun owners are trying to do. Like I said, like most of us in Massachusetts are fine with our licensing process, because like one thing is because you have to have a license. We don't have that 2-week wait on handguns. Like I walk in, show my license, give my PIN, give money, walk out with gun. I'm happy with that. Like I'm fine with the system. I'm fine with the fact that like most people that have a firearm in that area, like I don't have to worry. I'm not saying there aren't illegal guns in the state of Massachusetts. I'm sure there are plenty. But it's just strange because because I was a member of the NRA for about a year, because it came free with a membership when I did my first time I did my gun conceal course. But then it just, I let my shooting expire, went over the year and a half mark or whatever it was, and took it again, which it was interesting because like I learned new things from the other course that I took. So I'm not, and the thing I always find strange about them like asking for money, it's like, because I'd ask like, what's this for? It's like to fight for our gun rights. Like, okay, like what are you trying to do? Like, clarify the laws? Or, like, oh, like we're here to like stop the restrictions on like all this stuff. I'm like, well, what restrictions? Like licensing. I'm like, I like the licenses, or like this and like stuff. And I'm like these are certain things that like personally I like that you're trying to go in. And the reason I had an issue with the NRA is like sometimes I feel like the NRA thinks the national conversation is always the same as the local conversation, where most people in Massachusetts, like we're one of the few states I feel like there's probably more handguns owned than rifles compared to most states, because right. We don't hunt with rifles. We have a handgun for protection. I don't really, like, I'm sure some people have shotguns, but at the same point, it's just like, that's just ability to move if you live in an apartment, like most people do in Mass. So we're mostly handgun owners. We're not trying to go for hunting. Like, assault rifles, like, it would be nice to have one, but, like, I don't really feel like I need one kind of deal. So it was just, like, this, I know these are my views, but a lot of times whenever, like, we finally get some, what I would call, like, better educated gun reform coming from other organizations, such as, like, Goal and other stuff that actually, like, work closer with the communities, as soon as the NRA is, like, I like that they touch it, like, people that are laymen or the uninitiated from any point of view, they see that, they're like, I don't like that. Because this perceived evil organization likes it, and it's because they touched it, everyone else drops it. Personally, I feel if the NRA really cares about gun rights in Massachusetts, the best thing they could do would be to step out and let the other organizations that are better working with the community and actually are listening to the community do their job. And like, that's one thing I've always had an issue with the NRA is like, they want to be the voice for us all, and they act as if they are. And that's one thing that always makes me want to cringe to a degree, because there are other groups out there, like you have the American Rifle Association, but like I always find it funny because they kind of like get after the NRA because they call them like they work too much with the left, and like how dare they, like 2A or die kind of situation. I might be mixing that up with another organization, but there's a few out there, and I'm like, yeah, you're not really helping our conversation. But you also have like Pink Pistols, you have Armed Equality, which are two LGBTQ gun rights advocacy groups, where people go like, LGBT, like that's far left. It's like, yeah. And that's where I wish the NRA would go back to it, like as you're saying, like get back to the states, but like maybe have a conversation with the states that don't like them and find out why they have a bad reputation there, or people are uncomfortable when they get involved.
Right.
That's just like that. So if anyone from the NRA is listening, like, please take the heart. It's like, I'm not saying that it's an evil organization. It's just, you aren't the end all be all for all of us. Even though I might be the minority, but I don't feel like I am. You probably used to speak for us back when my dad was shooting back in the 60s and 70s, but you're not speaking for the majority of us anymore. And that's something they need to fix, which is
right.
One feeling on it.
That is the end of part one of this episode. If you enjoyed listening to Austin, you can feel free to join us for part two. I highly encourage it. Or you can also find him on the Florida Gun Network. If you had any issues with anything that you heard, such as topics or statements on this episode, feel free to contact me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. I would love to hear your opinion. This is a place where everyone's voices are welcome. If you want to be on the podcast, contact me there, or you can even submit articles that you want to write. I have a articles page on the website. That's www.rightsandwrongspodcast.com, where the articles are written by people like you. You hear my voice every week. I don't think you want to hear it anymore. If you enjoy the podcast and you like what we're doing here, consider supporting us on Patreon at rightsandwrongspod@patreon.com. You can also donate directly through PayPal, or you can buy some merch. Like, we just got a new shirt out there. You can buy hats and you can buy mugs. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Keep an open mind and have a great night.